All right, let's go back to the book of John again, and let's just review the very last verse of John 3 in verse 36. And then when we come to John, the sixth chapter, we will do an in-depth study on what it means to believe. We'll do an in-depth study on it. Here, John 3 and verse 36, here's an absolutely profound statement. He that believes on the Son, this is active belief, that is believing, not when it's convenient, but all the time, on the Son has everlasting life. And he that believes not on the Son shall not see life, but the wrath of God abides on him. Well, I tell you, I don't want to have any circumstances where that is so in my life. I mean, I have enough troubles of my own without inviting the wrath of God on me. I really do. You know, and sometimes God requires things of us that we have to swallow our pride, we have to put away our vanity, and that's hard to do. That is hard to do for every one of us. You know, the next time someone brings up something that you know is not right and that you know you need to change, but you don't want to admit that person that you know that you ought to do it, maybe you'll go ahead and change your mind and do what you're supposed to later, but you won't admit to that person. See? You see how hard it is. Well, picture this in the situation if we had that attitude toward Jesus Christ. We would get nowhere with Christ. So we have to have this right attitude with Christ in believing. Now, let's go to chapter 5. Let's begin here in the 5th chapter. Just a little background about this feast, which is mentioned in verse 1. John 5 and verse 1. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now, this feast is not identified as being any of the known feasts. But it has to be one of those feasts, because even a marginal reference. How many have a marginal reference? I have one, and it lists Leviticus 23, verses 2 through 34. Those are the feasts of God. Now, we know in the book of John, it has this pattern. It has Passover, then this feast. Then it has Passover, chapter 6. Then it has Feast of Tabernacles, chapter 7, which is in the fall. And then we have Passover again. So we have a spring, fall, spring, fall, spring, is the way that it's listed out here in the book of John. So in my harmony, I proposed this feast as possibly the Feast of Trumpets, because it talks about the resurrection. But it does not indicate that this is a prolonged feast such as the Feast of Tabernacles, where there is a period of time that is listed. So this is apparently a one-day feast. So I would have to say that, in thinking about this again, that this feast could possibly be the Feast of Trumpets or the Day of Atonement. Either one. Talks about the resurrection, and it talks about giving life. Now, there's also a possibility that this could have something to do with the last great day. However, I'm not sure. I would be inclined to think that this would be one of the one-day feast rather than the feast where we would have a prolonged period of time. However, it could be the last great day. Actually, when you think about it, this feast actually more portrays the last great day than anything else. Now, let's think about this for a minute. If it were the Day of Atonement, we would have to ask, would any of these things be done on the Day of Atonement? We would have to conclude probably not, because the Day of Atonement, we are told there should be no work done, no work at all, nothing done at all. But then on the other hand, the Jews came after Jesus, who said, "My Father works." So it doesn't eliminate the Day of Atonement altogether. So it would have to be one of those three. That's the closest we can get: trumpets, atonement, or the last great day. Nevertheless, there's a tremendous message here for us. So let's continue on. John 5 and verse 2. "Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. And there lay a great multitude of impotent folk, a blind, halted, withered, and they are waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water." So there was a certain time. It pinpoints it, but it doesn't tell us any reference that we can hang on to. "Whosoever then was first after the troubling of the water that stepped in was made whole of whatever disease he had." You know the way people are and some of the diseases that they would have. You could probably see just a pathetic group of people and just picture it in a Mideast setting with all of, you know, with all the things that would be there, the people, their sickness, their disease, their praying, and a lot of them were probably praying and crying and waiting and watching. And whenever the water stirred, you can imagine the commotion that took place in trying to get down into the water. "And a certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years." Now that's an awful long time to have an infirmity. 38 years. "When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had been there now a long time in this case or in this manner or with this sickness rather, he said to him, 'Do you desire to be made whole?' And the impotent man answered him, 'Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. When I'm coming down, another steps down before me.'" Now, you talk about irony of ironies. You talk about what you could do in the way of a movie of just showing the cruelty and the extreme anguish of people taking advantage of one another. But isn't that the way it is? They're all there waiting for the water to be troubled, and the first one in, he gets healed. Guess what? If you're there, you are going to make sure you're the first one in. And here's this fellow moving to get down there, and he never gets in there. Maybe he's been there 10 years. He's had this disease 38 years. Maybe he's been there off and on for 10 years trying to get down to get healed. No one would help him. "So Jesus said to him, 'Rise, take up your bed and walk.'" Now, the bed was just merely one of these roll-up pallets. It wasn't any great thing. You know, it's a lot like we think of today as a bed with a box spring and mattress, you know. Obviously, that would be carrying quite a burden. All right, so just roll up your little pallet and walk. "And immediately the man was made whole and took up his bed and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. And the Jews, therefore, said to him that was cured." Now, notice this attitude. See? This is why Paul says that you are saved by grace. This is why Paul says you are under grace and not under law. Notice the attitude. "The Jews, therefore, said to him that was cured, 'It is the Sabbath day.'" Probably in great pomposity. "It is not lawful for you to carry your bed." Now here this poor guy is stuck. Now you imagine 38 years, and let's just say he was there 10 years, and seeing all of these Pharisees pass by in their pompous robes and with their phylacteries and the great representatives of God, which probably didn't even deign but to look over the little wall there and look down and see all these sick people down by the pool, and finally one is healed. Instead of saying, you know, great, you're healed. Now imagine how that fellow felt. Imagine how he felt who was healed. If you had something that had been bothering you for 38 years and you were healed of it, how would you feel? And you would feel great. There would be nothing that you would want to do more than to tell other people, look, I've been healed. But here come the officials. Aha! It is the Sabbath day, and it is not lawful for you to carry your bed. They're almost saying, you dirty rat, you don't deserve to be healed. This is the Sabbath day. And he answered them, what could he say? You know, he that made me whole, the same said to me, take up your bed and walked. And they asked him, which man is that which said to you, take up your bed and walk? You know, we have the Pharisee Gestapo here, huh? And he that was healed did not know who it was. You can imagine. Now, just picture this is, you know, like policemen arresting someone. Who was it? I don't know. Who did it? I don't know. What did he look like? I don't know. Well, what did he say to you? Take up your bed and walk. Well, it's the Sabbath day. You broke the law, see. Okay. For Jesus conveyed himself away, and a multitude being in the place. Now, why couldn't they make a movie of this? Boy, you could make a great movie of this. Man, seems to me absolutely fantastic. Okay, verse 14. And afterwards, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, now look. That's what behold means. Now look, or watch out, or pay attention. Now look, you are made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you. It's quite a statement, isn't it? What was his sin? Doesn't tell us what the sin was. But whatever it was, it afflicted him for 38 years. So here's also showing that once your sins have been forgiven, we are to what? Sin no more. Not go out and live in sin. So the man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus which made him whole. And therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus and sought to kill him, to slay him, because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. Now this really shows a tremendous attitude, doesn't it? Sought to kill him. You know, it's like bringing out the whole brigade of tanks to shoot a fly. It's really what it is. There's a fly loose. Shoot it. Destroy the whole city. And when it's done, the fly is still flying around the city. See? Just completely blinded. Not being able to understand. They sought to slay him because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. Let's hold our places here and go to the book of Mark. Mark, the third chapter, we find another account of healing. And this was on a Sabbath day, and this was in a synagogue. Mark, the third chapter, beginning here in verse 1. And here we have the same kind of attitude, the same kind of looking at Jesus. And he entered again into the synagogue, and there was a man which had a withered hand. Now, you've seen people that have had their hands all withered up like this. How'd you like to have it if you had a hand like that, just all withered up? You've probably seen those who have had polio and everything shrinks down. Their arms are about an inch around and their hands are, they can't move them, all grotesque. And if you had a hand like that, or if you knew that someone was in the congregation with something like that, you'd certainly want to see them healed. Now, verse 2. And they watched him, whether he would heal him on the Sabbath day. Now, what was their attitude? Their attitude was not that they were watching, hoping that he would heal him on the Sabbath day. No, that they might accuse him. They were looking for an accusation. Now, there are people of attitudes and minds that they look to accuse. It's all they do. They're called chronic complainers. And he said unto the man which had the withered hand, stand forth. Now, you have to understand the way the synagogues were. When the one did the speaking, he was in the center. Because they didn't have microphones, so they had to centrally locate the one who did the speaking, and the people were all around. So when he told the man to stand forth, he told him to stand up and come here because Jesus was apparently down there in the center of the synagogue. And he said to them, so he was preaching to the people and also the Pharisees, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath days or to do evil? Now they couldn't say to do evil. They would have to say to do good. So he asked the next question, to save life or to kill? But they held their peace. And when he looked round about on them with anger, well, Jesus was mad. Now, I've never seen a picture of Jesus mad. You know, they always show him sad. They always show him wimpy, long hair, you know, and This look on his face, his lip is ready to quiver up and he's ready to cry. But here Jesus looked around angry. I bet there were some people sitting there saying, if this is the Christ, he shouldn't be angry. Why? He has no right to be angry. Jesus was angry, being grieved for their hardness of heart. And he said to the man, stretch forth your hand. And he stretched it out, and the other was restored whole as the other. And the Pharisees went forth and straightway took counsel with the Herodians against him, how they might destroy him. Here they were after Jesus. You know, Jesus turned that whole world upside down with the things he was doing. Here's just one example. They were out after his hide all the time. Let's go back to John, the fifth chapter now. John, the fifth chapter. We'll just review verse 16. And therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus and sought to slay him. That means they were looking for an opportunity, planning to kill him, because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. But Jesus answered them. Notice this answer, and this just turned their teeth on edge. My Father works hitherto, and I work. Now notice the ETH in the King James. He says, my Father is working. That's what the ETH means, worketh. And it's on the Sabbath day. See, they didn't understand that to work salvation on the Sabbath day is not labor. They did not understand that. See? So he answered them in a way that just really set their teeth on edge. My Father is working hitherto, and I work. Therefore the Jews sought the more to kill him, because not only had he broken the Sabbath, but said also that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. Quite a statement, isn't it? Now, did Jesus break the Sabbath? And you would be surprised the number of Protestants that go to this verse to show that you don't have to keep the Sabbath because Jesus broke the Sabbath. What does this mean, Jesus broke the Sabbath? What does it mean? If he truly broke the Sabbath, then Jesus did what? Jesus sinned. And if Jesus sinned, there is no Savior. Whose version of the Sabbath did he allegedly break the Pharisees' version of the Sabbath. What he did, the Greek there is luo, which means to loose. He loosed the Sabbath day from what? From the Pharisaical traditions that they put upon it. That's what he did. He loosed the Sabbath day. Now let's go to Mark, the second chapter. Mark, the second chapter, and verse 23. Here we find another example of the Sabbath day. Verse 23 of Mark, the second chapter. And it came to pass that he went through the grain fields, as it should read, grain fields. Corn is really a misnomer. Corn, when the King James Version of the Bible was written, was a word referring to grain in general. It's a grain field. On the Sabbath day, and his disciples began as they went to pluck the ears of grain. Now, have you ever done that? Have you ever walked through a wheat field or a barley field, and you go ahead and you reach down and you pluck off some of the heads of grain, and you take and rub them in your hands, and you get all the chaff off, and then you pop it in your mouth and you start chewing on it? That's the way we used to make gum out in the country. Couldn't get gum, so we would make gum out of the wheat. You know, that's where they get gluten. If they made gum out of the things they should, it would be probably not too bad to chew. But today it's all made out of plastic vinyl, so kids are chomping on plastic. You know, they're not chewing on gum. But aside from that, the disciples were going through plucking the ears of grain. And the Pharisee said to him, "Behold, why do they do on the Sabbath that which is not lawful?" Now, what was wrong with plucking a few ears of grain on the Sabbath day? Well, one of the Pharisaical laws said that if you pluck the heads on the Sabbath day, you are harvesting. You know, I read to you some of the things of the Jewish laws. If you spill a bucket, and this one stays in my mind, never will leave you. If you spill a bucket of apples on the Sabbath, and it spread way out more than 5 feet, you can't pick it up because you're harvesting on the Sabbath. You can't put it back into the basket and stand it upright. But if it just spills a little bit, you can put them back in a basket, stand it upright. Yeah, broke the Sabbath. But if they're spread all over the place and you try and do it, then you are harvesting on the Sabbath when you pick them up to put them in the basket. However, you can eat them one at a time. And you don't break the Sabbath. You may be as sick as a dog on Sunday. Okay? Now, same thing here. So he said to them, "Have you never read what David did?" Now, you can't speak against David, see? You cannot speak against David. "Have you never read what David did?" So he's saying, really? Do you even read the scriptures, is what he's saying. Okay? "When he had need and was hungry, and he and they that were with him, how he went into the house of God in the days of Abiathar the high priest and did eat the showbread, which is not lawful to eat, but for the priests, and gave also to them which were with him." Now, that would be a near blasphemous thing for the Pharisees to admit, but David did do that. And here, God is showing that when there is a need, God will provide. Was it not God's prerogative to provide for those people if he wanted to, even if it was the priest's showbread? Sure it was. It was God's right to do. So he inspired that it be done. Abiathar said, "Here, take the bread." So then Jesus said to them concerning the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. And I bet they just were gnashing their teeth. Too bad there weren't dentists with the, you know, in that day where they could provide them with false teeth. I imagine the Pharisees would have been lined up, get all their false teeth. But here again, the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. That's really quite a statement. That is just, you know, a sledgehammer statement for the Pharisees. The showbread was put on, let's see, if you've ever seen the book The Tabernacle by Moshe Levine, it shows the showbread. There was a loaf which represented each one of the 12 tribes of Israel. And they were stacked in a certain way where the showbread would be put there and it would be kept fresh for a whole week. The only ones to eat of that were the priests. They could eat of it when it came to certain of the sacrifices and things that they would do. Then they would take of the showbread and they would use it. I imagine that if there was an offering for, say, the tribe of Asher, that they would take of the loaf that was designated for Asher and they would use that bread in the eating of the sacrifice for that particular time. So when we come to the time that David, and they were renegades, they were outcasts, they were being sought of by Saul, ready to be killed. So he hid there with Abiathar, and there was nothing to eat, but he had to get rid of them, and they had to go on their way, so Abiathar gave them the showbread. Now, it was not lawful for anyone to eat but the priest, but God shows here, in time of need, then God has the right to take these small laws and do with them whatever he wanted. He is not saying that this gives anyone the right or authority to break the Sabbath or do anything they want to on the Sabbath. See? Okay, now let's go back to John, the 5th chapter. Okay, now let's just review once again, verse 17 and 18. But Jesus answered them, "My Father works," or is working, "hitherto," or that is, even at this time, "and I work." Therefore the Jews sought the more to kill him, because not only had he broken the Sabbath, but said also that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. And so that really was quite a statement. Now let's just finish off here with verse 19, and we'll pick up next time at verse 20, because we'll be covering an entirely different subject. But when we come back next time, I'm going to go through and show very clearly with a word study in the Greek that Jesus did not break the Sabbath. Well, here, let's finish verse 19. Then answered Jesus and said to them, "Verily, verily, I say to you, the Son can do nothing of himself, but what he sees the Father do. For whatsoever he does, these also the Son does likewise. And the Father loves the Son and shows him all things that he himself does, and he will show him greater works than these, that you may marvel." And then next time it gets into the resurrection, and we will show here that this is talking obviously then about more than one resurrection. So let's end it here.